Hey, deep fried fans. You know what I could use about right now? Some deep fried mozzarella sticks. Without a doubt, this is my favorite fried food, and I know a lot of you like them as well. This is Ellie Mae here to announce show number 26, recorded live on the expo floor at the Professional Developer Conference. In this episode, Keith and Woody sit down with Neeraj Negrani and Nigel Ellis to discuss Azure SQL Services, Microsoft's data platform vision of extending SQL Server capabilities to the cloud as web-based services. Neeraj is a senior product manager with the Microsoft SQL Server technical marketing team, and Nigel is a SQL Server data services development manager. All right, deep fried fans, grab that glass of sweet tea and get ready for some Gumpology.
Hey, folks, welcome back to another episode of Deep Fried Bites. My main man, Woody.
How are you doing, sir? I'm having a great time at PDC.
I am, too. I finally got some snacks up in here, you know?
Yeah, we are having so much fun meeting people and just learning more and more stuff than I think a human could learn in 3 days.
We've got the best job in all of PDC. We get to talk to all of the smart people.
Yeah, hey, we can ask them whatever we want, and we've asked some good questions and some dumb questions, and you know what? They're taking them in stride. So.
That's right. Well, folks, we're sitting down today with a couple of guys that like to move around data. I know that's your big
Yeah, I love interest. Mucking around in the data, relational data.
So we're sitting down with Nigel Ellis. He's an architect of SQL Data Services for Microsoft, and we're sitting down with Neeraj Negrani, who is a senior product manager on SQL Server strategy. So, guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Awesome. So, I mean, you know, we're at PDC. A lot of stuff has been announced, you know, this week. So why don't you guys just kick it off with, you know, kind of the high level of what's, you know, been announced, and then we'll sort of dig into it.
Great. So 3 days ago, we had announced one of our biggest initiatives in the cloud compute, which is called Azure Platform Services. That's actually a combination and integration of multiple services, starting with the bottom or base layer, Windows Azure. And you can think of Windows Azure as more like Windows OS in the cloud, our next generation applications.
We actually think of it as the overlord. You know, we talked to Steve Marks earlier about it. We're calling it the overlord. That's the name.
Love it.
It runs the cloud.
So. Let's roll with that. And on building on top of that as a distributed application platform, there are multiple services like .NET services for identity and access control, and there is live mesh services. And finally, we have SQL services, which is our extension of relational database into the cloud. And this was actually announced back at MIX 6 months ago when we had started building and sharing our vision with the customers. We got a great, great reciprocation on that, and we have continued to build on the momentum and come out with a much stronger story at PDC on the relational database in the cloud.
Yeah, so Neeraj just mentioned that we first announced our service at MIX in March this year, and that was a really proud event for us. We'd actually been working on this project over the last 2 years, so I was really excited to finally be able to tell customers about what we've been doing and share just our infectious enthusiasm about that. Since then, we've been in a closed beta with customers, so it's invitation only. And we're really pleased to be at PDC because this allows us to invite literally all the thousands of PDC attendees to actually start banging away on our services. So I've been here at PDC now for 2-3 days, and we have a lab section where people can actually try all the hands-on labs for SQL Data Services and .NET Services and all the Azure services themselves, and the labs have been packed. We've been checking out the blogosphere. We got really great ratings on our labs. People are just loving it. They like the message we have, and they like, you know, what is essentially a basic set of capabilities to start with. They're really super excited about the direction and the vision that we're sharing with them.
Okay, so that's kind of like the overview. So let's get into like some nitty gritty details, because our listeners are the smartest listeners on the planet, and they love to know how things really, really work. So, you know, SQL services. Okay, so it's data. It's in the cloud. There's a service. So I'm taking my data. I'm just trying to put this together as I'm thinking through like the the naming and stuff. So I'm taking my data from my database that I have, and I'm hosting a database on the Azure platform. And so my data is there, and it's getting scaled by the overlord and getting handled. Or the other word is service is like I think of like, you know, a WCF service that's being hosted that I'm, you know, sending messages in and getting messages back. Clarify for me mainly, what's the real story as to what's going on there? And then we'll go down a little deeper into actual some stuff of how it works.
In some sense, you gave two alternatives there, and you're right in both ways, right? What we've delivered with SQL Data Services is a service, so it's always on, it's highly available, highly reliable, and so on. That service is actually storing your data, and it offers a bunch of rich data processing capabilities. So you can send it queries, you can store things, update them, delete them, and so on, right? But also, there's a software side to this. So if you go to msdn.com and you go to our SDS Dev Center, you'll see in that Dev Center there's a whole bunch of code. There's a downloadable SDK with some sample tools. There's all the bits and pieces that people need to get started. So whether you're a Ruby programmer, a Java programmer, you're working in C#, you're on the Microsoft platform and on Microsoft platform, you can actually interact with SQL Data Services, right? So one of the core things that we focused on in the beginning was open protocol support. So our service is essentially supporting both SOAP APIs and RESTful HTTP APIs. And that means because it's an open protocol, you can actually access it from a variety of different stacks.
All right, so let me just kind of go back to that. So you said I'm right on both points because I am a genius after all. And so, I mean, there is really a database that's sitting, you know, behind the scenes. Is it like there's one database out there or are there multiple databases? I mean, what's really happening behind the scenes?
So behind the scenes, what we've done, so if you take a traditional server environment today, so a customer on-premise, if they're a small customer, they might actually have one server machine, and they buy some version of our server operating systems. They install something like SQL Server. Hopefully they use SQL Server. Great database product. Got to get my plug in there.
It is. I love it.
He's already being shameless, man.
So what they would do is they'd have that box, and then they have to deal with things about how they keep high availability, how they keep their data reliable. So they have to worry about how do they back it up, what's their restore, what's their retention policy, what happens if that machine dies, right? Do they have a backup server, right? So those are all issues that, you know, we find customers really struggle with. It's very, very complicated technology, very hard to get right in some cases. And SQL Server has been making inroads and making a lot of that stuff easier. Now, on the flip side, SQL Data Services solves many of those problems for you. So rather than there being one server provision per customer, what we've done is we've taken hundreds of servers, we've glued them together with the secret sauce, as I call it, in the data center. And that essentially, all those servers are cooperating together. So when you create your, what you might think of as being your database, we use the term authority and container in our service. When that's created, the system automatically decides where your data is going to be stored. When you query the service, it automatically knows where it should send the query to, which set of servers in the back end that are going to munge over your data and send the results back for you. That's all taken care of for you.
Okay, so there are hundreds of servers, and they just, there's, you said the glue or whatever, the
secret sauce.
The secret sauce.
Yeah, spicy sauce.
The spicy that's coming in there. So is there really one database in there?
So really what you could think about it as being that for every customer of the service, they can have many databases. So what we've done is we've taken a shared pool of resources, so many servers, and we're offering what we call a multi-tenant service. And what I mean by multi-tenant is each customer is a tenant. Each customer can create as many databases as they'd like. And all of those customers and all their data are sharing those common resources. Now, that's good in a certain way because it means it can be economical for people. So rather than everybody having a dedicated server that's sitting idle for a lot of the day, right, we're also going to be able to offer them economical storage and processing costs. Plus, we've got more reliability because we've got many servers in there available for them. If one server happens to have a problem, the secret sauce can take care of automatically moving that workload to another server where your data is already stored, right? Plus, there's a case where you suddenly decide you want to store more information in it. I'm sure many customers have been in the situation where they've run out of disk space. So they run off to their hardware store, they go jam another disk in there, they scratch their head, they figure out how to span the data onto that new volume. Not so with a service. We've got all the capacity available. So if you want to store more data, you just start throwing it up to the service, and it takes care of it for you.
Just want to add one thing. What Nigel talked about, think of it as a distributed database with scale out, HA, self-healing all built in. You're sharing the resource, but you're not sharing the data. So we have security and privacy built in. You're not going to share the data across the resource.
One thing I know about multi-tenancy is it's siloed too. So it's shared across maybe all these servers, but I'm secure in my silo that no one can reach in and touch my data, correct?
Exactly. So, I mean, if you think about the analog of a virtual machine, so many users are using the same machine and they're running little VMs. Those VMs are silos. So you could take the same analog for data. Your container or your database is a silo. Nobody else can access your data unless you allow them to.
I'm a SQL architect, and I do a lot of development on the SQL platform. What's the story going from design and requirements? And also, is there a easy way to push out existing databases?
So first of all, that's a great question. Let's make this clear. We are not taking a database of on-premises and putting it in cloud. It's not a dedicated hosted database. It's a distributed database environment. So there's a big difference between a typical hoster taking our SQL Server and hosting it, which is a dedicated resource, as opposed to building a cloud distributed database. So our story is that we give the customer or developer the option, the flexibility. If you want to go on-premises, you have two options. You can still go with hosted environment and leverage your database and call a hoster and start using a database, but you still pay for the DBA. You still pay for administration. You still pay for designing the architecture for scale-out, for HA, for data protection, for self-healing. Here, it's all taken care of. So that's a big difference. So they have the flexibility and the option to go one architecture or the other. That's one question. The other part is I'll have Nigel answer on the manageability of it, on the management tools.
Yeah, so right now the model that we've exposed is very simple, right? So, and one of the reasons I think it's worth talking about why we did that. So when we first looked at this project, we said, what's really important to people when they think about what we term database as a service? So a distinction being from hosted SQL to database as a service. And we think of database as a service is really around high availability, high scalability, cost, some sense pay for what you use, right? You could think of various pricing models behind that. And then finally, features. So we've talked to a lot of customers, and it really comes down to the fact that people are willing to sacrifice functionality in return for getting better scale, better HA, and having a better economic price point for using those capabilities. So when we built out SQL Data Service, we said we have to prove out those first three, the HA, the scalability, and the cost, and then we'll figure out what subset of the existing SQL or hosted SQL features may be appropriate for database as a service. So what you've seen us announce in March and also reveal some other functionality at PDC is essentially a very, very small subset of the capabilities we can actually support. Now, our goal is to essentially subset as much as we can of that existing database market that people have today. So your example of, can I take my application on-premise today and point it at the cloud? My belief is over time, you should be able to do that by changing some subset of your application functionality. Now, is that 10%? Is it 20? Is it 30? We don't know yet. The model we're starting with, unfortunately, says you have to change your data access tier today. Eventually, we'll start to expose more of the richer relational functionality. So for our SQL Server users today, that's T-SQL. It's table DDL, it's indexes, it's foreign keys, eventually stored procedures, and so on. If you look at what we have, very, very simple. You create what we call a container. That container has a pre-created database table schema inside of it, which allows you to store rows or records of any shape and size. Everything's indexed, so you just walk up, you can start storing information inside of it, you can start interacting with the service.
Okay, so compare what you're doing with the other competitors in the market. I mean, what's the story between what you're doing and what they're doing?
So let me first step back and say that if you think about the whole paradigm of software for services that we announced 3 days ago, right? right there, we discount our competitors by 50%. Things that we can do, the power of getting the customers to build applications on premises and giving them the flexibility to extend to cloud with their existing apps or building new apps in the cloud, right? None of our competitors can offer that kind of a flexibility today, right? Now, let's go one level deep on the cloud-based infrastructure. What we are pitching here is database as a service. SQL Server historically has been building databases, enterprise-critical, mission-critical databases, and helping our mission-critical customers to build LOB apps on it, right? Like SAP apps, other apps. We have this huge learning from there, and we're taking all the skill set and learnings, and we're extending that to cloud, right? So, A, this is probably the only database services that will actually have the flexibility and the power of relational capabilities in the cloud that can not only benefit and target enterprise customers, but also can be flexible enough to solve developers who don't need that much richness to use database as a service very economically. That's the big thing. It's economical. So a Web 2.0 customer or developer can use this economically based on consumption. Enterprise customers can build mission-critical LOB in database because we will have the richness with the flexibility of, you know, a simple database in the cloud. That's the power that a lot of our Web 2.0 type database as a services like Amazon's or Google's cannot offer or will not be able to have the flexibility.
So if I have a web application, an ASP.NET application I push out, and I build a SQL data service, this container that holds some data. I have a blog and I have SQL services to hold my data for the blog. As my consumption goes up, do I have to manually go out and say, I want more consumption? Or do you guys know as my blog hits go up, it just keeps giving me better and better performance?
I think I understand the question. You're basically saying, does the overlord and the storage overlord have a secret magic wand and he can say, hey, Woody, you're super popular this week, this month, and so on. You know, make it so. Just make my app work. Sort of. But not quite. So in one sense, we've got all the storage capacity needs covered for you. So if you need more space, you tell us you need more space, and it's instantly available to you. There's no notion of send us an email, and then we'll give you a date by which we'll have more space provisioned for you, and so on. Because you might not be popular by the time we get that space anyway, right? So what we've done is we basically said this container model that I mentioned, you can have as many containers as you want. Okay. Now, there's with this ability and this flexibility, there also comes a price. You have to think about designing your application with a container model, or you might think of it as being a partition model in mind. If you know that over time you're going to have a large number of blog entries and it's just going to keep growing and growing and growing, what you wouldn't want to do is to build your application just to store all the data in a single container. Because eventually you're going to hit size limits, right? The same way that if you store it on a single server, you'd hit size limits eventually. So what we like to do is we like to sit down with customers, and there's a lot of details on our dev center that talks about the partitioning patterns and so on that you should be using. But in your case, you take your blog app and you'd say, I'm going to create an authority, and underneath that authority, I'll have many containers. And I take all my blog entries and then I distribute them across those containers. So as I get more and more blog hits, those containers start to fill up. Eventually, you know, the first 1,000 containers I created might be full, so you can then provision more containers. And provisioning a container is immediate. It happens right away. It's just a data service call.
So how would I search between all the containers?
So what you would have to do today is essentially, given a request coming in, you would basically fan that query out across those containers, and then you'd aggregate or concatenate those results together. Now, one thing to point out is, let's say you have 1,000 containers. It's not like all those containers are on a single server. Remember, we've got many servers in the back end in our cluster. So what we've done is we've taken those containers and we've distributed them across the servers. So as a coding pattern, what you can actually do is you can spin up asynchronous requests. So you could send 100 requests concurrently or 1,000, depending on the size of your thread pool. And all of those requests are going to come back, you know, in a short amount of time. So you've taken what could have been essentially 1,000 seconds of work, if you executed them sequentially, done all of that work in parallel, and then got the hits back, and you can actually get good response time from that.
So, Nigel, I mean, as a developer, okay, so it's a service. You said earlier that you support SOAP and you support REST, which is cool. How do I authenticate that, like, if Woody is my front-end website and I'm the SQL service and I'm doing SOAP and you know, REST, how are you authenticating that it's coming from the right person and stuff like that?
Okay. We have two protocols. We have SOAP and REST. And over those protocols, we secure the channel using SSL. Now, our authentication mechanism, so identifying who it is talking to us, different than authorization, what they can actually do, is relatively simple today. So every Azure account that's been provisioned has a set of credentials. You could think of them as being a username and a password, or an application and a password, depending which metaphor works for you. Really, they're the same thing. We have two authorization endpoints that we support today. So we've got basic auth over HTTP and SOAP. So that's where you essentially, you add an authorization header to your request, and you send in the username and passwords. And then we check that, and if it passes, we say, you are Woody, you own this stuff, we can go hammer against your data. The other thing we've done is there's a new service as part of the Azure platform, which is .NET Access Control. So it's one of the new .NET services. And .NET Access Control is essentially a claims-based authentication and rule mechanism. And with Access Control, you have accounts. Now, we've done the first step of integration. That is to say, an account in the Access Control system can own a container or an authority in SDS. Okay. What we'd like to do to go beyond that is to actually support different authorization mechanisms. So, for example, Nigel owns this container, but he'd like to give Woody permission to read things, possibly execute a query against the whole container, possibly only retrieve one particular record or one particular blob in the container. So we have a roadmap as to how we are going to integrate those technologies together. So if you look at what we've done with .NET Access Control today, you can sort of scratch your head and you say, wow, I can do really interesting authorization things with my applications if I integrate with .NET Access Control. Once SDS does that level of integration between .NET Access Control and the data service, I can then start to ACL and grant people more specific rights over my data. So that's kind of the path that we're going down. We think it's super exciting. We've heard a lot from a lot of our customers today around the type of authentication scenarios they have. So if you look at the level of support we have right now, realistically, it requires a business logic tier to secure your data. The app owns the data, and then it users talk to your application. And you say, oh, it's Nigel signing in to deepfriedbytes.com. Therefore, he's allowed to perform certain types of queries and so on. Where we'd like to get to is this notion that the users that talk to your site could be, if you wanted them to be, understood by the back-end data service. And this gets into a whole lot of interesting scenarios, particularly where blobs. So you guys host podcasts and so on your site, right? So probably what happens is someone goes and hits your server today. You go then hit some file system and you flow the data back through your web service, right? Well, that could be expensive, right? Both in terms of latency because you're flowing it back through your service. Wouldn't it be great if essentially someone could hit your service and then you return to them a URI that they then hit in their browser, and then they go directly to the data service, right? So scenarios around where you could pre-authenticate a URL for them that might be valid for a certain time period and so on. We then receive that URL from their browser. We look at it. We crack it open, and we say, okay, this is valid. We know that this URL can be trusted, so we're going to be able to serve that blob directly from the data service. So that can save people money because they don't have to pay twice for the network cost.
I can see where that would be a big help to content providers.
Well, I think what he's saying is that we get to, you know, host our podcast now on SQL services for free. I mean, that's how I took that. I don't know.
Well, or at least it's going to be a lot cheaper for us.
Well, actually, as a PDC attendee, you could use your invitation code and you could start banging on this. I mean, I'd love to see Deep Fried Bytes prototype a new version of your website on the Azure platform. You're ASP.NET based today. You could use the Azure hosting to host your website. You could stick your data in SQL data services. You've got like two more days left in the show, right?
Yeah, we have all this free time. Yeah, yeah.
We've only got about 100 hours of post-production work to do on these shows that we've been recording at PDC.
But, I mean, I do find that this is huge. I think people have to change the way that they look at data in some ways. But that doesn't mean that it's bad or good. I think it just means that that from a SQL Server person like myself, I'll have to change the way I look at things and look at more things as containers,
mm-hmm.
and then go on from there.
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit of a paradigm shift to what people are used to. And my belief is that if people embrace a little bit of change, there's a big reward there because we offer them the HA and the scale and all of those other good things.
There's one more thing is that we have been very, very prudent and cautious and not going too forward, but also moving along with the requirements coming from our developers and customers. So even though you may see a paradigm shift, it's driven by the demand. It's not, we want to make sure that we get the first step ahead, but also evolve and make it baby steps and get out there towards maturity.
I'm just curious, how long have you guys been working on this?
So we actually started the underlying SQL platform, that is the SQL cluster. It was a project started inside SQL Server for Microsoft use only, less than 2 years ago. And then the external facing service, we actually spun that up last year. And that's a layer that is built on top of this massive scale platform. And we've had a bunch of talks at PDC. So we had 5 scheduled talks. We got one more to go. And the talk tomorrow is actually going to do a deep dive into, the secret hot sauce that glues all of these servers together.
You know, what technologies are you guys using that like an average developer like us have access to? I mean, I would assume that you're using like WCF. You're using
probably virtualization, Hyper-V for the back
end. ADL.NET data services.
Yeah. What are you guys using for REST? As an example, what are you guys using for REST?
So we actually, in terms of technologies, we're a WCF-based web service. And we use WCF for both our SOAP and REST heads. So that was a big advantage for us. We said we can use one technology.
So if somebody asks me if WCF scales, I can just say yes, SQL Services uses it. So now I'm covered, right?
We're using it, yeah. And it's actually worked out pretty well for us. I think with any technology, there's always some things that you wish it had this extra feature or you wish this was a little bit easier. But I think it's actually been a good technology choice for us, and it's actually worked out pretty well. So we've got WCF in our web service head. Then our internet-facing layer, so that's the web services layer, that's all managed code, pure managed. In the back end, we're actually running our service across 2 tiers. So we have our web services tier, which you could think of all WCF requests, all SOAP and REST requests are coming in.
And like IIS is out there hosting all that
stuff? No, we're not using IIS actually. So
no.
One of the things that's really super important for this service is the HA. So I keep mentioning HA, right? So high availability. And what we ended up doing is we said in order for our service to be super highly available, we have to build some management glue to tie all of this together. And we're using an internal manageability technology that was developed for some of the Microsoft data center uses to essentially do bare bones machine provisioning. So by that, we mean a machine gets racked up in the data center, and then we can install all the software we want on it remotely. We have very, very little physical hands-on management of those machines. So by that, I mean we'll deploy hundreds of servers in a cluster, and if a server dies, we'll try and remotely re-image it. We'll try that a few times. If that fails, we'll RMA the machine, but we won't basically have a guy walk into the data center that day. We'll do it on a monthly cycle. And the reason we can afford to do that is we have enough capacity there. So if we lose 10 machines, 15 machines, that's okay, right? That's sort of the price of doing business here, right? And we're using what we call commodity servers. So a typical SQL Server box in an enterprise could cost anywhere from $30,000 to $50,000 all up, right? Fairly expensive. But what are you getting for that money? You're getting very, very reliable hardware, redundant power supplies, SCSI, NAS, SAN storage, fiber channel controllers, right? All of this technology goop that gives you assurance as an enterprise that it's going to be reliable. Well, that stuff's expensive, right? So what we did is we said, well, we think we can build this cheaper. Being a software guy, it's like, well, how do we do it? We write some software. And what we do is we take commodity servers. And by commodity, I don't mean essentially your $300 PC. These are essentially rack-mountable servers. They cost, order a small number of thousands of dollars, say $3,000 or $4,000. They use commodity drive technology, so serial ATA drives rather than high-speed SCSI drives. But they've got a lot of RAM. They've got like 8 gig of RAM, dual processor, dual proc, and so on. But how do we take one of those servers and have it replace one of your big multi-core fiber channel disattached storage machine? Well, we use multiple machines, and we tie them together. So that gives us the processing capacity. And then we get the reliability by replication. So if any of those machines dies, your data's safe because it's on a bunch of other machines. So that's where the HA comes in. If any one machine dies, we automatically failover your request to one of the secondary servers that we have. So case in point, if we need to deploy a software patch to our clusters, security patch, whatever that is, we can actually do it by doing a rolling upgrade across all of the machines, and we can guarantee high availability. So how many of your viewers actually have to have a scheduled service window? You say, we've got to take our website offline. So you stick up the page that says, sorry, you know, check back later, we're patching things. We can't do that in a multi-tenant service. Imagine we have thousands of customers. You know, dear customer, please let us know when it's okay to have half an hour of outage. That isn't going to work for us. So consequently, when we started the project, we said, we need to build this in. We need to figure out how we can deploy rolling upgrades of new software bits and so on and keep high availability. And the reality is it works. We've tested this thing. We've had cases where we've deployed fixes to our software. There's been fixes to the rest of the software, WCF, .NET Framework, service packs, and so on. We're able to roll that across, and the system maintains high availability.
So will this scale across not only the specific location where the web cluster is, will this scale over geographically to other locations within a continent and possibly overseas?
Yeah, so that's one of the things we've been looking at. So the Azure services that we've announced, our focus target market initially is North America, right? You start big market, and then we'll be looking overseas. So as far as SQL Data Services is concerned, today, across our production beta environments, our development pipelines, and so on, we're in about 3 or 4 data centers in North America. So Microsoft has a bunch of data centers. They're building more. They're pretty expensive, about $400,000 to build a new data center. It's actually gone up recently. Price of copper's gone up, so the data centers get more expensive. So what we'll be doing is, in our data service, we'll have clusters of SDS deployed across North America. And remember at the beginning I was telling you about this authority and container thing, so a container being the where you store your data and so on. Authority is actually a DNS name. So what is a DNS name? Well, it resolves to an IP address. And an IP address physically resolves to some set of logical servers in a data center. So with your account, once we provision across multiple data centers, you'd be able to select where you would like your authority to be created. Now, that doesn't mean you say, hey, I know you guys have a data center in San Antonio on 1st Avenue and 5th, so please stick it there. More likely to say we'd have regions. So we might have East Coast, West Coast, you know, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, Asia Pacific Rim, and so on in the fullness of time. So you'd be able to say, this is where I'd like my data to be. And that's pretty useful if you think about geolocation. You might have readers or viewers in Europe. And they might have high latency talking to servers in America, so you might actually want to bring the data closer to where they're located.
So before we started talking, you guys said that all these hands-on labs that people can try out here at PDC, you guys have pushed these out to the public. Where can they find those?
You can actually find those on a couple of our websites. One is there'll be a website on the PDE site, which will actually have this huge resource kit that customers can download and get access to the hands-on labs. The other good access, good website to go and get more hands-on to a sample code and SDK tools is our MSDN site for SDS, where we will have all the sample codes in a way to register for the services to get provisioned in the SDKs.
So not only, I know being a SQL MVP, SQL is just one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is the whole BI, the business intelligence. What are you guys doing for that up in the Azure cloud?
That's a great question and a great segue into our one of another initiative called SQL Services Labs. It's the labs actually is a combination of our new innovations and incubation ideas that we are putting together that extend our other capabilities of SQL Server into the cloud, like Cloud BI. So we are actually in that labs, you'll see a lot more initiatives where we are thinking about reporting services in cloud, data mining in cloud. And we have a sneak preview of those initiatives, of those incubations onto our website under SQL Services Labs, where customers and developers can see and share their thoughts that how we are thinking about exposing these services in the cloud. And the other part is we are thinking beyond the relational, right? We are thinking relational is one way to extend data platform to cloud. The other is BI and how we can integrate reporting and analytics and figure out a way to expose that as a service to customers. We are exposing these ideas through our labs, which is a great point of how we are thinking in the future.
What about just like, just not even BI and just sitting there thinking like, what about just like, logs? Are you guys going to expose a way that somebody can look and see what was queried and what was done and how many and, stuff like that? Like, how much data did I serve up today? And I mean, how many queries did I have and all that kind of stuff,
So I think that's a great question. There are two aspects to this. One is that once eventually next year, sometime when we actually have a business model, right? And we figure out a way to tell you what has been your consumption on the resources, whether it's the storage or queries, right? We will actually generate reports. We have a mechanism in place and we have started thinking about that. So as a developer, every month, you would know exactly how many queries you ran, how much storage you used. So you start seeing a pattern. Think of this as like your electricity bill, utility bill, right? How much water you've consumed, how much electricity you've used. So you kind of see how much can I plan for going forward, or can I spend this much, or how much should I keep aside, right? So it's a great tool and great way to report that we'll have actually going forward.
Yeah, one thing that's worth mentioning too, relative to what have I used. So in the CTP of SQL Data Services that we're essentially onboarding people on at PDC, when you go and query your authority and go query your container, we actually report metrics. So we'll tell you how many GET requests did you do, how many puts, creates, updates, deletes, how much data did you transfer into and out of the cluster, how many logical IOs did you do against the system. So these are going to be the basic building blocks that would eventually roll up into essentially reportable metrics and eventually feed into some form of a billing instrument, billing account, and so on. So you can actually, as a developer, you can query these things. And the thing that I've always been frustrated with in some services is you can get a bill of what you've used, but you have to go to a web page. And then if you want to do any data processing on it, you sort of got to screen scrape it, and then they change the look and feel of the thing, and then your report breaks. So our focus has always been on, let's make this thing queryable using our own data service. Then any reporting and billing will build on top of those reportable metrics, and then you get the best of both worlds.
With this being SOAP and REST, I mean, really, I would put my stuff out onto SQL Services. I would go and generate my code from the WSDL, and then I can just start passing stuff the way I've normally been doing. So this is nothing new from a developer angle, really, right? It's just I'm using the same stuff that we've been using for years. We're just moving it instead of internal in the enterprise. We're, going to expose the data instead of going directly to SQL Server. We're going to go out to, a service now, and it's just a regular service with SOAP and REST. And I use the same, however I want to do that with AJAX, or it's just whatever. That story is just what I've been used to. Right?
That's exactly right. So if you're used to web service technologies, the good old HTTP reader class, SOAP clients, and so on, this will be very, very familiar to you. The only difference is there's the provisioning model and the conceptual model that our service exposes. But if you're already consuming REST and SOAP today in other web services, your experience won't be any different.
How would I do test, beta, production, and all that kind of stuff?
That's a great question. So, we face this issue ourselves. So SQL Data Services is really an app, if you think about it. So we have, I run the engineering team in the group, and we have dev and test environments. We have integration environments for partners. We have pre-production, and then finally we have production environments. So we think about a workflow that our software goes through. And what we've been looking at doing is saying, well, if we need it, our customers are also going to need it, right? So things that have come up is to say, well, for people who actually want to develop directly against our live site, Is there a notion of a sandbox environment or a development cluster that they could use that possibly has different limits, It possibly has a different SLA. For example, there may be no data redundancy in it, right? I'm okay for you guys to wipe the cluster periodically because this is really a test environment for me and so on. And in return for those lower limits, we could offer it at much cheaper cost because you're not using as many resources. So that's definitely an area that we've been looking at. We don't have any firm plans behind when we would do that and what shape it would take. But having differentiated SLAs or service level agreements around different clusters is something that we think is going to be very important for people.
Could you just create? I mean, it's really, if it's a service, it's just a URL. So I could go, I mean, it's just test dot whatever and beta dot or prod dot. But it's really, that's a lot of, like you just said, there's thousands of servers and you know, all this different data center stuff. That's not that easy to do. But if you could just say, let me take this container and move it over here or copy it or do something with it, then it's just, you know, I'm just pointing my actual service endpoint to just, you know, something different in the,
exactly,
in the thing. Yeah. So then I can just say, well, just point here. That's our test, and then this is our, you know, whatever, right?
Yeah, and it's realistically, it's an app config change.
Yeah, right? It's really
the interface that you're talking to is the same. It's just at a different location.
Well, what do you say we do a little rusty washer segment with these guys?
Wow, I like having rusty washers with the actual product team.
Yeah,
so
that's good. All right, cool. Folks, here we go. All right, so for those of you that don't know what a rusty washer segment is, we do them here on Deep Fried Bites. There are things when you go to PDCs and tech eds and conferences and demos and sessions, and you go there and everything looks great and shiny. We call it a shiny penny, but when you get back to deploy it and play with it, there's some rusty washers in there. So, guys, are there any rusty washers in SQL services right now?
There's some things, right? I mean, the thing that I'd start with is we're learning, right? So we've obviously talked a lot about what our service does today for people at PDC. We've done a lot of talks and drill down material as to how it works and what its capabilities are and so on. But the service is really in its infancy, right? We're learning a lot. And since our service went live in March in our closed beta, we have learned so much. You know, we thought we're the super smart guys. We made some mistakes, and we've learned from them, and we're getting much better. So, I mean, you talked a little bit about, hey, can I have a test environment and a dev environment and so on? We don't have those, right? What we have is a service endpoint that you can talk to. We don't publish an SLA today, right? We have certain limits on the amount of data you can actually store inside the system. So speaking of our rusty washers, I'd say there are more things we haven't got to yet. So we talk about customers saying, how am I using the service? What have I consumed? How can I debug when things are slow? What's my tooling experience like from Visual Studio? How can I integrate with other services, .NET services, Live Mesh services, Windows Azure Storage, and so on? We have a vision of tying that all together in a single platform. As someone who's kicking the tires on these services right now, you'll see there's little gaps there, right? We know there's gaps there, and we're going to fill those gaps because we think there's a lot of value in tying it together in a single platform. So my challenge to your readers right now is go bang on the system. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hate. You know, all feedback's good feedback, right? Oftentimes, we always hear people bitching and moaning that this thing doesn't work and so on. Well, I like those. I also like to hear when we've done something right. So please send us feedback. Please bang on the service. You can register for access to the service at Microsoft.com/Azure. You can get signed up for the CDP. We'll be onboarding more and more people in the oncoming months.
Just one more thing I'd like to add. Like Nigel pointed out, there are some rusty washers that we are aware of, and there are some we are not aware of. So come and tell us those things. Those are the most important ones that we may have overlooked. We want to make this more of an evolution process and not leapfrog you developers or your requirements, right? So tell us your needs. There are gaps. We'll fill them up. If we feel this is a right business decision for us to put in those gaps in there, we'll put it in.
Yeah. So do you guys have blogs, or how would someone contact you guys individually?
So we actually have a team blog that we primarily use as our blog to publish what's going on. And it's a shared blog across our team. We have various team members actually posting stuff on there, all the way from patents, appealing for feedback on certain features, letting us know you know, what people think and so on. So that's actually on blogs.msdn.com/ssds. And then on that, there's also jumping off points to contact various people.
And there's also another link to our forums for people who want to ask for help or support to get on provision to our services. And that's, again, available on our MSDN site.
Are you guys on Connect by chance?
Microsoft Connect?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Good.
So in fact, that's if for people that actually sign up and register for access to the service, they actually fill out a Connect survey, which is how we record all their information. Then once they've been onboarded, they'll receive an invitation code. They then enter their invitation code. That's associated with their live ID. And then we have a way of contacting people. You know, if we have to change some functionality. So, you know, rusty washers, we might not know we have one. A couple of releases from now, we might decide we have to change a piece of functionality, and that might break certain scenarios, right? So how do we deal with situations like that if we can't contact people? So that's super important that we know how to contact the people that are using our service.
Okay. Yeah. We're seeing a lot of people use yep. that, so it's good.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on. It was really great to hear about everything. I got some stuff cleared up in my mind. I hope some of the listeners did too.
So. I did too. I learned a lot. So I've got a lot of reading to do and changing the Deep Fried Bites website over to the
now that we get free,
the Azure
free
cloud.
Data hosting.
Yeah,
and everything.
Yeah. So I'll let you guys know how everything goes.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
All right, guys. Well, we appreciate you tuning in. You can always reach us at comments@deepfriedvice.com. You can also reach us on Twitter and Facebook. Always love to hear feedback from the community. Until next time, keep your tea glasses full and your axes sharp. We'll see you.
Bye-bye.